This is the TAN Talk Radio Network.
Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. Oh boy, do I have a great program today. In a little while, I will be talking to Ginger Bolton about one of my favorite subjects. Well, two of my favorite subjects, coffee and donuts, because we're going to be talking about Double Grudge Donuts, book number 8 in her Deputy Donut Mystery series. But hold on, Ginger. I want to play first a book buzz that Rita Moreau did for somebody very important to us, Barbara Hinsky. Now, Barbara Hinsky is going to be a guest on my YouTube channel, Joy on Paper Live. And so I wanted to play this book buzz to remind everybody about Barbara Hinsky's wonderful book, Guiding Emily, which was turned into a Hallmark film. So it's going to be a fun interview with Barbara, and we do these book buzzes for the authors that we love. So we are going to do one for Ginger Bolton, too. So Ginger, listen to this, and then I'll get right to you. Okay, we're going to just, in 1 minute, as soon as we get this started, because these book buzzes are done for authors. They're free of charge. We give them to them so that they can use on their social media and to help promote their books, because authors need to get out there and do a lot of promotion. It's lots of fun to write books, but you also have to get out there and sell them. And now that the pandemic's over and people can get out and get about and meet, so we're going to have lots of authors that are going to be on Joy on Paper, whose books that we love and we want to keep promoting. So if as soon as Big Ed in the control room has the book buzz from Rita Moreau, then we'll play that. And meanwhile, I don't know, if Ginger, if you're listening. Okay, we're ready. Here we go.
This is Rita Moreau reporting for Joy on Paper with the latest book buzz. Today we were talking about a heartwarming book, Guiding Emily by author Barbara Hinsky, the acclaimed author of The Christmas Club, now a film on the Hallmark Channel. Here's the buzz. Emily Maine had it all, a high-powered career with a leading technology giant and a handsome fiancé bounding up the corporate ladder. Their island wedding and honeymoon were idyllic until a tragic accident causes her retinas to detach. Her well-ordered life is shattered, as are all treatments are unsuccessful. She slips into blindness. How will those around her cope with her tragedy? Can she rebuild her life in the most unwelcome new normal? Meanwhile, a black lab puppy named Garth fulfills his destiny to become that most esteemed of all creatures, a guide dog. Guiding Emily is a heartwarming tale of love, loss, and courage as Garth and Emily make their way to each other. Sometimes the perfect partner has four paws. Readers should know that Guiding Emily was conceived during a tour of the Foundation for Blind Children by the author. Barbara Hinsky was inspired and moved by their mission and is donating half of her proceeds from Guiding Emily to the foundation. Barbara, you should know, is the best-selling author of the beloved Rosemont series and has now published mystery, thriller, and suspense novels in her Who's There collection. Now that her novel, The Christmas Club, has been made into a Hallmark Channel movie, she is completely starstruck and thrilled to have her work on the screen. Amazon and BookBub best-selling author Barbara Hinsky does not disappoint. This is Rita Moreau reporting for Joy on Paper. For more of my suggestions on the mysteries you should not miss, go to our webpage, www.radio-joyonpaper.com, and click on Book Buzz. That's radio-joyonpaper. Rita Moreau, buzzing off for now.
Thank you. Okay, well, thank you, Rita, for that. And now I'm going to turn to my guest, Ginger Bolton. Hi, Ginger.
Hi, can you hear me?
I hear you fine. How are you doing?
Oh, just fine. Thank you for having me on.
Oh, well, it's a joy to talk to somebody who loves coffee and donuts as much as I do, that's for sure.
I do love them.
Well, of course, we're going to talk about Double Grudge Donuts, which, of course, book number 8. I understand there's a book number 9. Is it already out?
Not yet. It's coming out November 26th.
November 26th.
Blame the Beignets.
Oh, that's a good one. Yes, well, I think a lot of people, when they can't close their jeans, they can blame the Beignets. So I love the titles of your books. And, of course, this one, this entire series is so fascinating. What I love about your books, and we're going to, as you listen to that book buzz that we did for Barbara Hinsky, we just love to help promote authors and their books. And now you had a series before this one, and sort of I want to, that is one of my sister's favorites, and that is, of course, my sister, who is considered the connoisseur of cozy mysteries, in addition to loving mysteries, which she loves both to read and to listen to now on Audible. She is someone who has always been involved in, you know, something to do with thread, because she loves to sew. She's always been a person who sews. She could draw her own patterns. She just loves material. I mean, I could take her to a material store and leave her there for 3 hours and come back, and she's happy as anything. So
I totally relate.
I mean, she loves the Threadville mystery books. She really, those were, that's how we first encountered you. And of course, that's written under a different name, Janet Bolan. But I remember that book, Dire Threads, was nominated for the Agatha Award.
That's right. It was exciting.
Oh, that must have been. And as the first book, so, you know, this is the wonderful thing about writing. You get so much joy out of it. And then, so you did that series, and then you decided this new series is switched over to donuts, which is always great. So I'll let you explain this series, and then I want to come back a little bit and thread my way back to the Threadville mystery series, okay?
Okay.
Okay, so you started with this idea for a donut mystery, Deputy Donut. Explain who... Did I hear somebody back there?
Oh, my dog is having a fit.
Is it upset because we're talking about Deputy Donut?
No, somebody must be walking past the house. I'm surprised you can hear him because I'm shutting a room upstairs and he's downstairs. I'm sorry.
Oh, no, we always will. Oh, no. Never be sorry for a dog. Not on Joy on Paper. We welcome dogs. We love it. So it's so good. Are you out in the middle of nowhere, as I think you described, Falling Brook?
I'm in rural southwestern Ontario, Canada.
Oh, wow. That's great. It's a beautiful area. But you said these books in Wisconsin, right?
Right.
So have you have experience in Wisconsin with cheeseheads or something?
Yes, I've visited there. And it's much like the northern woods of Ontario, which are not too far from here. So I just love that type of landscape. You know, trees and rocks and water.
Okay, well, you got it all in Wisconsin, that's for sure. So when you came out with this idea for the series, and, you know, it's nice, you know, you had one series, so you must have learned a lot before you got into the next series, right?
I hope so.
You hope so. Well, I think you have, because you got all the way to book nine, so you know that you've definitely learned a lot. So tell us first about Double Grudge Donuts and this mystery, which I found very, very amusing, because I love talent shows. And coming from a small town myself in Upper Peninsula of Michigan, I've gone through some of these talent shows. So tell us about this one.
Yes, in Double Grudge Donuts, the town of Falling Brook, Wisconsin, is having an arts festival with a different theme every day. So it's Musical Monday, Troubadour Tuesday, Wee Wonders Wednesday, Theatrical Thursday, and I'm blanking, and Skit Saturday. And then during the day, the performers parade around, tour the small town, and do performances in front of various businesses, including Emily's shop, Deputy Donut. And during the evenings, they compete in the bandstand in the village square. Unfortunately, the very first evening, during Musical Monday, a man with a set of bagpipes, interrupts another performer and kind of destroys his performance. And then the man proceeds to interrupt other performers. The next day, he interrupts some teens who are singing in a barbershop quartet. He parades around at night playing his bagpipes like at 3 in the morning. So by the third morning, he is not very well liked in the town of Falling Brook. And somebody really didn't like him and did him in. And Emily finds him, his body, and her cat, his name is Deputy Donut, Deb for short, leads her to this body because the cat is very curious about this. She walks her cat to work on a leash and harness, and then the cat stays because the cafe's office during the day, and Depp can look out and see. She can look into the dining room. She can look into the kitchen, and she can look outside. So she has a little playground up there in her with ramps and catwalks and tunnels in her office. So she keeps herself busy in the donut shop, but she's. She's instrumental in, you know, helping, you know, she accidentally stumbles upon things like, oh, what's this lying in the puddle here besides the set of bagpipes? It's a man. But she doesn't talk or, you know, solve mysteries in any kind of mystical way. She's just there. And she looks out into the dining room, and sometimes she'll puff up and act all annoyed and scared. And Emily could take clues from that, but cats are fond of herrings, including red herrings, so don't trust death's actions.
Well, of course, Emily is a well-developed character from book one. Of course, she's a 9/11 dispatcher, and explain a little about her backstory.
So she was a 9/11 dispatcher, and the night and she was married to a detective. She was quite young at the time, and the detective was shot. His partner was with him, and Emily wasn't at work that night. She had gone out with friends, and a new dispatcher was on duty, so she's always felt guilty that she wasn't there to get help for her late husband. And his detective partner always feels guilty because he has survivor's guilt. So there's a lot of tension between the two of them in the very beginning. She doesn't even want to see him because they have this shared grief and guilt. But slowly over time, they realize that that shared guilt is a bond between them.
And it's worked its way through up here to book 8 and into this story, which I found amusing. Now, I love bagpipes, but most people, I mean, I just love them. But a lot of people do find them annoying. So I thought that was pretty good, a rude bagpiper. I like that. That's got to be a first in a cozy mystery. I love that.
There's another one. I'm sorry, I don't remember the title of the author right now, but there's another one in about a bagpipe competition where one of the bagpipers dies too. But I think I love them, but they're also funny.
You're right.
There's something amusing about them.
Well, they put a smile on my face. I always wanted to try it, actually. I thought, I don't know. But it'd probably sound terrible.
Me too.
It is a great idea. The story flows nicely. And you mentioned red herrings, which is very appropriate because that's one of the fun things about writing a mystery series, a cozy mystery series, particularly where you do have to come out and think of the red herrings that you're going to be throwing in there along the way.
Yeah, I actually think of them as clues. I don't say to myself, "Now this is a red herring." I just... I come up with a victim and a villain right away. That's the first thing I have to do and figure out why someone would commit this drastic offense against humanity. And then I have to come up with 4 or 5 other possible villains and some of their motives and what might point to them as the murderer. So, and then you weave that all together. Now, I'm lucky because my editor is willing to look at a 25-page synopsis, and that sounds really horrendous to some people. But to me, getting all of those ideas in a row and figuring out what's going to happen when really helps. And then, and once he approves that, then I know that the story is not going to go totally off the rails.
So that's the process, for authors who are just starting off. They often wonder about the process that, first of all, of course, to get a publisher in the first place is not easy, always. Now, with your first series, for that first book that was nominated Dire Threads was nominated, so it was really... it was impressive. You got great reviews for it. And as you said, it was a wonderful thrill to be nominated because this is a very prestigious award. And to get nominated is very important in your career. So when you wrote that book, how did you go about that? How did you get that one published?
That was... partly thanks to my critique partners, Krista Davis and Daryl Wood Gerber, who are both very prolific mystery authors.
Daryl's been on my program, yes.
So the three of us were, critique partners on the internet, not in person. And Krista got published first, and then Daryl, and all of us were writing suspense. Krista decided that cozies would work better for her, and she got published, then Daryl got published, and then both of them turned their eyes on me and Krista particularly started urging, I might say nagging, you must write a cozy. And then she went so far as to tell her editor that she knew somebody who could write cozies and also who knew how to do machine embroidery. And so, and the editor said, "I'd like to see a proposal." So that was that.
That was that. I
sent it to Krista's agent at Bookends, and within weeks I had a contract.
Wow. Because that is...
based on a proposal.
Wow. Now that's great. That's fantastic.
Then I had to write it.
That's what I was going to say. It's not often that you get a deal based on a proposal.
So, it was a 3-book contract. So that was a little daunting. So in those days, I was more of what they call a pantser, writing by the seat of my pants. My outline was not nearly as detailed. But I have become a plotter for sure.
And now you write a synopsis first, like as you said, and send it to your editor?
Right. And he always approves it. He never says no.
Who's your editor at Kensington?
John Scamamiglio. I'm going to have to go with it. John Scamamiglio.
This guy is wonderful. He is the editor for so many of you great cozy mystery authors. He's a very special guy. I think he needs his own recognition because he really does, that what you just said about, that you can give him the outline and he will go through it and get you sort of set on the right course right from the beginning. I think that's a great way to do it.
Yeah, he's a legend. I knew about him 20 years before he was my editor. So it was very exciting to get him as an editor.
I know. I've heard from so many authors that he is just fantastic. So you go through this process, you write. Now, when you wrote your first series, I don't know, when you wrote your first book, you knew that you already had 3 books. But so when you started, how do you keep track now? Did you learn a process along the way? Because I know one author who started, she wrote one book and got that published and she hadn't really planned. And then you get one after another. And before long, she's all confused. She doesn't remember everything. So when you started off this new series, did you set to yourself a system of keeping track of the characters, who was who, where things were taking place, what do you have, like a character sheet, something like that?
Yeah, I have, I also, when I turn in the manuscript, I turn in a style sheet, which has all the names of the characters in there, and their details about them. So I keep that for myself. So each book has one of those style sheets, and I can look back at each one. I also keep a detailed outline beyond the synopsis that I send John, of each book. And I have hand-drawn maps sort of floating around my office of the town.
Oh, that's a good idea. I think that's a great idea to have the map, so really to mentally place you in the town. So when you're looking to move people around, how the distance, because I recently read, about a year ago, I read a story, a book by an author, and everything was wrong. I mean, she used a real town, but she was going in that area, in that particular state. She was going from town, to different cities. It was more a suspense novel, not a cozy. But, it'd take her 1 hour to get from that town to the next town. And actually, in point of fact, unless, she could fly like a bird or she got that first flying car, that would have taken her like half a day because her state is big. She like, duh, and I found it very annoying. I really like when you have to know these details. When people start writing books so often, and I've been doing this for 9 years, and I've seen where authors don't have that solid basis. They don't really know their characters that well, and that happens if you're not well. You have to be organized.
Yeah, I really like using fictional towns. You avoid a lot of problems with that. But still, when in Cinnamon Twisted, the book before Double Grudge Donuts, I had to go to Google Maps and figure out how long it takes to drive from here to there to make sure that some of my clues made sense.
Exactly, exactly. And now when you're, so you know your characters, you have your style sheet, which so many authors who just start off don't realize that they have to have a style sheet, that editors at a publisher, they want style sheets.
Well, it certainly, I think it helps them. When I get the style sheet back from the copy editor, it is much changed and improved from what I sent. And the other thing, I do have to sometimes go back to the novels and search, you know, what color was it? Where his eyes did I ever say? So I keep the word files of each novel, and I can look, quickly search for a word or a phrase or something. But I do have to go back. So far, I have not had to reread the whole novels before.
Well, speaking of reading, when you're writing, you know, you use Word, Microsoft Word?
Right, yes.
Yeah. So when the process of writing is so fascinating, and for people who are just starting off, and I have quite a few events where I'm going to, finally, after the pandemic, I'm actually going to start back meeting, you know, writers groups. I did that a lot before the pandemic. I was meeting writers, at, you know, maybe two or three writers groups a week sometimes. But now I'm starting with that again, because it's fun for me to also get to meet authors sort of often at the beginning of their process. And I've told them before, you know, that you have to, you know, it's not so much whether you're a pantser or not. You have to, you still have to have some solid basis for your characters and understand them and be able to, you know, keep track of them. And as you said, what the color of the eyes, because, you know, I'm one of these people, when I read, I remember things. People don't like that always. I did that to Mary Higgins Clark a couple of times. You know, one time, one of my interviews, I started the interview off, and I used three of her opening sentences in my opening to her. And I was waiting to see if she recognized that those were her sentences. They were word for word her exact sentences, and I said to her, "You wrote those are your words." And she said, "Oh, when did I write that?"
Yeah, we do forget, and also you revise so many times, especially those first sentences that I might not recognize my own either, especially if they were short.
No. With that in mind, do you keep track, like, of your best sentences or the cleverest sentences that you've written, or sentences that are particularly, like, if you find a great metaphor, do you keep a list of, well, I came up with a great metaphor, something like that?
No, maybe I should, because I might use it over again.
Well, you know, it's a good idea. I think, and of course, if you have a quotable sentence in your books, these are things that you know, maybe you should keep a list of, because it's great, I think, to have that just as a referral, and also maybe to use in promotion. So that's something you should think about.
That's a really good idea.
So
other thing I'm aware of is sometimes people will ask you to read, and I prefer to read in the beginning, because, you know, you don't have to set up what you're going to read when you start to read. So it's also a good idea to make sure you have a first page that has some oomph to it. And I mean, even the first, they might even like read three pages, as much as three pages. So it's good to have the first three pages that you don't mind standing up in front of people and reading. I don't always manage that.
But it's a good idea. It is actually a great idea. You know, so because now we're back to that, and we do hope that more and more events will take place where you have the opportunity to be with people and meet people. Because during the pandemic, of course, it was very difficult. But for you, do you do events? Do you go to some of these conferences and things? Do you like that?
Yes, I think it's great fun. In fact, on May 18th, I'm joining the Kensington Mini Con, Cozy Mini Con in Groveland, Massachusetts.
Ah.
Not on my web page, come to think of it, but it is on my Facebook page. The details and how to RSVP. So my Facebook page is Ginger Bolton.
So when you attend these events, what are some of your favorite fan experiences?
Oh, I attended one last June in Pennsylvania. Not Mechanics. Oh, dear. I forget. Oh, Oakmont, Pennsylvania. And one woman came in, saw me in my Deputy Donut hat, and she put her hand over her heart and looked like she was about to swoon. That was really stellar.
Oh, that's adorable. Do you sell that on your website?
Sell the hat?
Yeah.
No. I just bought I bought some fake police hats, and I stuck fuzzy donuts on them, and they were huge. They looked like a train with its headlight on. So I found some small plastic donuts and I glued one on. My daughter says the hats are stripper hats, but anyway, they're supposed to look like the hats that the staff wear in Deputy Donut.
Is it on your website? Is there a photo of you with that hat?
I don't think so.
Well, why? Why not? Why not? I'm asking you an important question. Everybody wants to see you in a Deputy Donut hat. I think it's fantastic.
Okay.
People love
that's
merch.
A good idea.
So, yeah, no, you could probably sell them. Well, at least it could be a great giveaway every once in a while to, you know, as a prize, hold a contest. Yeah, you should. Well, you're crafty. You're very crafty, right? You love crafts. You do a lot of the machine embroidery?
I did before I started writing. Now I don't have time.
Now you don't have time. Of course.
Yeah.
For me, my mother loved embroidery, but she did it by hand. I still embroidery and tatting.
Beautiful.
That's wonderful stuff. I love that. And as I said, my sister loves threads. Any threads. I mean, she has boxes and, you know, threads, all sorts that she's bought all over the world. Particularly when we went to Italy. She bought these beautiful, beautiful threads in Italy. You know, more than a rainbow, more colors than you can imagine. So he says, do you still do some crafting in between writing?
I theoretically, I'm not sure I do very much. In fact, my sewing machine needs to go visit the shop. So.
I've never been able to sew or crochet. Well, I'm left-handed, so learning to crochet or knit has been impossible for me because everything's, you know, for right-handed people. So I've never done it. But I love to watch my sister do it because it's so beautiful what she comes out with.
Yeah, I do enjoy crocheting, knitting. all of those things. My mother was left-handed, and her mother was right-handed, so I'm like third-generation confused.
Well, you should be doing it with both hands. That's it. Well, you're certainly doing a lot of work with both hands now, unless you get carpal tunnel syndrome from all the typing you're doing, because you're writing a lot.
Yeah, a book every 9 months is kind of much. However, some of my friends write 3 books a year. So,
well, that's a nice gestation period, 9 months. you start off with nothing, and then whoa, it grows, and then finally your editor's happy with you, and he says, okay, let's go to print. So, and of course you're with Kensington, who does these wonderful covers. Kensington covers are the best, aren't they?
Oh, they're adorable, and I think my covers are the best of the best. But I'm biased.
Yeah, well, it is first this. Which one is it? Oh, I know the first one. My sister has it. She pulled it out not long ago. It's the one with the fritters, Survival of the Fritters.
Yes, that cover sold the series, I'm sure.
That beautiful cat on the front of it.
Uh huh. I love that cover.
Yeah, you're very lucky. Kensington is absolutely the best. And I just want to tell people, Kensington uses real illustrators. They do not use AI. They actually pay talented artists to create their covers. And I think that's very important because it's so wonderful the amount of work. they print a lot of books, and they hire a lot of wonderful artists who... Isn't it amazing how they can capture the feel of a book? Just, you know, it's beautiful what they do. And, of course, Double Grudge Donuts cover is also nice. Although the donuts aren't big enough. I like big donuts. I'm so happy that I got to speak to you. And I'm going to have another cup of coffee. I don't have any donuts. I think in the future... when I interview you for book 9, I'm going to make sure that I have some donuts on hand. What's your favorite donut?
You might want beignets for that occasion.
Oh, beignets. Oh, I can make beignets. I can make them. You're right. Oh, I'm going to make them. Well, you know, maybe what we'll have to do for that one, for when that book comes out, you'll be on Joy on Paper Live on YouTube so that we can both be eating beignets. How about that?
Oh, we'll be covered with confectioner sugar.
Oh, that'll be great. We'll look super. And you can bring your dogs, your cats, and everybody else, okay?
Okay.
All right. So what's your website so people can go to there?
It's gingerbolton.com.
Okay. Gingerbolton.com. The name of the new book is Double Grudge Donuts, and you can get it online and then pre-order. The one coming out in November. It was great talking to you, Ginger. Thanks
great
for joining
talking
me.
Talking to you. Thank you.
Okay. Bye-bye now. Bye.
Bye.
Okay, we're going to have some commercials, and then I will be... Oh, and a book... No, we're going to have a... Yeah. Am I doing a book buzz? I think I'm doing another book buzz, because this is an important... We'll play the book buzz. Big Ed, let's play the book buzz too, and then I'll talk about it after we come back from commercials.
Hello, fellow sci-fi readers. This is author Bria Burton reporting for Joy on Paper with your science fiction book buzz. Today's communique to galaxies near and far includes a 2020 debut by actor Lou Diamond Phillips, The Tinderbox, Soldier of Indira. This standalone young adult novel is available in print, ebook, and audiobook. Now, let's download the book buzz. A great war rages between the invading Indirans and the Monoliths, two races divided by the Grand Schism, a cataclysmic event that tore their once shared planet in two. An Indiran soldier named Everson barely escapes as the rest of his compatriots perish, and Mono claims a battle victory. Everson's identity as the Prince of Indira remains a secret as he is conscripted to retrieve a mysterious tinderbox. The seers have prophesied the downfall of their mad king when the princess weds a soldier at the rise of the Aurora constellation. The king of Mono believes the tinderbox will ensure his unimpeded reign, along with permanently imprisoning his daughter. When Everson succeeds in finding the tinderbox, he flees, aided by its high-tech and supernatural properties. Everson's journey leads him to a poor community of farmers where he recognizes how the Mad King's reign has oppressed the people. The tinderbox offers him a portal to the princess where their brief encounter heralds the start of the prophesied events. Everson will do whatever it takes to rescue the princess and restore peace, and the Mad King will move heaven and earth to stop him. Equal parts military science fiction and space opera, this genre-bending tale weaves a clever and twisty web of court intrigue paired with high-tech ingenuity and layered with echoes of Shakespearean drama. Author and actor Lou Diamond Phillips is best known for roles in television and films such as Longmire, Stargate Universe, and La Bamba. His debut novel began as an idea from his wife, Yvonne. Her artwork is embedded throughout the novel. This is Bria Burton with your futuristic fiction fix, signing off.
This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Looking for inspiration? Looking for something that will intrigue you? Then this book is for you. Jim Lamb's poems start out as caterpillars, creepy, crawly, and raw. Then a miracle happens as they transform into colorful, bright, and conspicuous works of art. You can find Jim's new book of poetry, Hurting Butterflies, at Amazon.com. It's the perfect gift for the book lover in your life, even if it's you. Hurting Butterflies, the perfect holiday gift, available on Amazon. Get Hurting Butterflies.
Do you dread being called on to speak at meetings or family functions? Have you envied those who can sway an audience with well-chosen words? Do you know that people who speak well earn more money, earn more rewarding careers? Gain the confidence to master any speaking situation. Toastmasters will allow you to find your voice. Go to Toastmasters.org to locate the club nearest you.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at LarsonPatentLaw.com.
Have you ever faced disaster? The Red Cross is always there for you. The Red Cross responds to a call for help every 8 seconds. They have never turned anyone down. Now they need your financial support so that they can be ready to help you when the need arises. Donate online at redcross.org. Thank you.
This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
And I am back, and I want to talk about several things, including the fact that the book buzz that Bria Burton did for Lou Diamond Phillips was fantastic. And, you know, when we started doing these book buzzes, we didn't know that it would lead to a lot of wonderful things, including once we started doing the book buzzes for the authors, then for some of them, we started as Bria did, interviewing them on the radio program, because once a month, Bria is taking over Joy on Paper on the radio, and next week she will be on next Thursday, and she will have another sci-fi hour, because there's a lot of authors out there who are writing terrific sci-fi books, and so many, you know, it's so much fun to read a sci-fi book in for many reasons, whether it's a strict science sci-fi book where, you know, you have a lot of high-tech things, or it's a sci-fi book that incorporates fantasy. those books just take you away for a little while. You're in almost like time travel back or forth, or it's you're out there in your head. You're seeing things and you're learning things. And I love these books that are also inspirational, because so many sci-fi books really are inspirational. And when Lou Diamond Phillips decided to write a book, it was so wonderful. You know, the story of how he came out with the idea, well, actually his wife, Yvonne, had the idea. It's a fascinating story. And when Bria interviewed him on the radio program, he explained how he came out with it. And then they discussed that over a couple of different times. And so just this week, we've done an interview with him, and we're going to have this on Joy on Paper Live. And this time, because we're able to do it on YouTube, his wife has joined in the conversation. And why I particularly like Lou Diamond's book, Tinderbox, is in that book are the illustrations that his wife has done. And her name is Yvonne, and she has done such beautiful illustrations. And I think it's more and more people are doing that, because there's a tradition, you know, in when books were published, if you go back and you look at the books published, you know, in the 19th century, early 20th century, so many of them did have illustrations. And then at some point, I think probably World War II, where paper was in shortage, they stopped putting illustrations in books, and you didn't see them again for many years. But illustrations in books are coming back, and that's, I like it. If you read, and I have quite a collection of you know, books from the 1800s, and so many of them, it's such a delight. You turn the page, and there's an illustration. Now, some of these illustrations now have become, I mean, they're famous. You see them, and you know that they've been used many times, and shown many times. So the artists who did them were all brilliant. And just like Yvonne Phillips is so talented. And her new design for the next book two in this series, The Tinderbox, is fantastic. And you can see that on Amazon. It is pre-order, and it is going to be coming out in November. But again, I like having the illustrations in a book. I think they're very, very just, as you're reading, they give you a moment just to think, and I love it. And so we're going to be talking to Lou Diamond Phillips on YouTube Live, and that interview will be next Sunday. So you can see it then, and I think it's going to be lots of fun. And when we're doing these, the nice thing about the radio program and combining the radio program and the YouTube channel is that I get to talk to the authors here on the radio and help them get out there and promote their books, and they use these to use on their social media and to get people interested in their books. And then once I know something about the author, I can then decide which ones I'm going to invite over to YouTube Live, so that particularly I like to do things where I have the ability to show photos and show some of the, like, when I just talked to, the author of this wonderful book, Double Grudge Donuts, Ginger Bolton, and I liked the idea when she said she wore a hat at one of these conventions. Authors need to be noticed at these conventions, and it is so smart to be to have something that sets you aside from everybody else. And I like that she has a donut hat. And, different authors have different things. Kathy one of the best cozy mystery authors who is absolutely delightful when she's at a convention. She dresses in the most gorgeous, colorful dresses that you can imagine. And you notice her right away. So all of these things are part of what I like to discuss with the authors, especially now that I can do it also on YouTube Live, and they can show us. Now we're gonna have Ginger Bolton on, and I'm going to insist that she wear her donut hat, because authors need to have this identity. You know, it's just like everything else in life. It's partly name recognition. So I'm Patsy with a Z, and what I've been trying to do here for 9 years, over 9 years now, just help authors promote their books. And I want to have them here both on the radio program and on Joy on Paper Live. So check it out. It's on YouTube. I already have a bunch of interviews. I just launched it on St. Patrick's Day. I launched it on St. Patrick's Day on the 9th anniversary of the radio program. And since then, I've already had 12 interviews that I've uploaded to Joy on Paper Live on the YouTube channel. So go there and check it out. And there's also going to be on the YouTube channel, there are going to be some contests. So if you go there and you subscribe, you will immediately get into our list. And if you check it out, we're going to have some contests coming up. You might win some really nice, valuable prizes. So check it out, Joy on Paper Live. Watch some of the videos, subscribe, comment, like, and share, and we'll enter you into a contest to win autographed books from authors and some other wonderful merchandise. Maybe I will even make a donut hat and offer it as a gift to somebody for joining me on Joy on Paper Live. So just push that subscribe button. Anyway, everybody have a wonderful, wonderful day. Say something nice to somebody. I will say something nice to Big Ed in the control room. Thank you, Ed, for everything. I appreciate you. I salute you. And everybody have a wonderful, wonderful day. And be kind. And give a book to a kid, because kids need to read. That's the best thing you can do. Bye-bye now.